We're going to see. So real quick, I first of all, I'm thankful for the opportunity to get to share my story. I think it's real easy. It's kind of as a breakthrough to have the opportunity to be around guys. I was telling Stan last night, you know, while we were walking up, I said it's so cool because every time I'm around you guys, I get an opportunity to hear how the lack of judgment that comes from this group, where people, it takes, you meet somebody in like 2 minutes and they're telling you like their life story and some pretty emotional stuff, and you're like, cool, man, I'm from Deer Park. That's intense, bro. But it's actually really cool because it kind of helped me realize that to be a man, it's okay to have feelings. It's okay to be able to share your pain and what you're going through. This whole group has kind of been able to help me understand that and recover and kind of be where I'm at today. So I know I got a timeline, so I'm going to start my little timer because I'm trying to make sure we get going. I'm glad I was after breakfast and I'm not keeping us away from food, because that's usually, I've had to speak at events where I'm the guy talking before lunch and everybody's just like, I hate you, bro. Real quick, you know, Sam has known me for a little bit, but you know, I'm a what you would call a recovering egomaniac. I was actually introduced to a book by a guy, Bradley Berger, who came here, who gave me a book at Mo Ranch called "You Have What It Takes." The book actually talks about the distinct difference between males and females, and really starting from. And I have the beautiful privilege of getting to raise a daughter, so I get to see it day in and day out. But men, we want to be noticed from day one. If you ever watch a boy grow up, they're diving off the couches and they're jumping through stuff, trying to catch fires, you know, and they're like, Dad, look at me. You know, for me, it was just like anybody look at me, predominantly my mom. But I think when I read that book and went back and looked at this whole story, I thought, okay, that's rooted in my own desire to just gain attention. And that's kind of what fed my ego from an early age. Versus when I look at my daughter, it's just this, she just wants to be made to feel beautiful. And that's what they do, you know, from day one. It's, Daddy, do I look pretty? Daddy, how's my hair? And you're like, where do you get this stuff from? But I was raised by a really sweet mom. I was raised without a dad around, but all growing up, I knew what love was. I was a very loving kid, highly energetic, the guy that the kind of class clown. I didn't really have sports or athleticism in kind of my genes, and so how I got attention and where it was really accessible for me at an early age was just being the fun, kind of loving kid. I was kind of that cool kid, and that made it work early on in life, and I didn't realize how much I sought attention at that time. I just thought that's who I was, and everybody loved it. Growing up into my teenage years, just kind of give you some backdrop. I was growing up, and I would go home, and my mom would work, you know, two jobs. So I remember when I was a baby, my mom would work at night, and so she would drag me around, like sleeping on couches, doing things like that while she cleaned buildings, and then she'd go to a day job. So I just knew my mom worked really hard. I knew what she did, but my dad didn't really, he was around, but, you know, I would go see him occasionally, and he would go drop me off at a, like a mall or somewhere and give me some money and then tell me to hang out. And then, you know, I just knew if I went to go see dad, I got new toys and I got some money and I got to go home, and I didn't really care for much other than that. And to this day, that's kind of how he loves. He's a gifts guy. That's just his thing, even to this day. Most recently, I went to go see my dad, and inside of about 48 hours, I took my daughter up there, and you could tell he was just sitting there on the last day going, you guys are kind of in the way. Do you want your check? And I'm like, give my money, man. We're out. So, but, you know, other than that, though, great loving dude, just not really around. He had some issues and just wasn't, part of my whole growing up process. So when you get to teenage years, being the class clown's cool, but you have to start being cool at things like football and sports because nobody really wants you to, you know. And so I'd go try out for a team, and then I'd do something stupid, you know, like in football. I'll never forget, I remember I tried to tackle this guy, and he was this giant man-child, and my jersey got caught up on him, and he literally drug my little ass, like, down the football field for, like, 40 yards. Like, I'm just dragging behind him like this, and I remember getting up from that and, like, looking at him, and, you know, he's like, you know, spikes the ball. He's like, oh, dual rules. I'm like, I hate you, man. So I remember going, okay, well, that's not for me. So I just started going home. I remember trying band. So I tried to play music in band, and then I would have to lug this saxophone home. And then everybody would, like, make fun of me because other kids, you know, my mom was working two jobs. So I'd be walking Home Alone or whatever, and I had the saxophone and try to get in these like scuffles and stuff and get in little fights on the way home. And so I was just like, all right. So one day I just threw down the saxophone. And, you know, my mom came home. She's like, where's your saxophone? I was like, I'm done with it. She's like, what'd you do with it? I was like, I threw it in the trash. It's what you do when you're done with things, you know? And she's like, not $300 saxophones. I work hard, you know? So I was like, okay. So really didn't have anything to go on. And so after school one day, some neighbors moved in across the street, this older kid, and they basically introduced me to my first little experience with drugs and alcohol. So my house became like the, because my mom was always gone after work, so she would have to work really long hours. So it was just that place to hang out. We had a trampoline in the back, and we would smoke a lot of weed, and then weed turned into acid and coke and just about everything you can imagine. And so that then led to me being this alternative / punk rock kid. I would leave the house and do whatever I want for a couple days, show up at school, and I found attention now through my ability to go out and kind of feed a new ego, which was driven by my ability to be the bad dude. So I intentionally sought out opportunities to get in trouble. Had a bunch of run-ins with the law up until I was about up until I was 17. I'd been arrested over 10 times. So nothing major, right? I never killed anybody, but I threw some Molotov cocktails at people. I hit people with antennas from cars and stuff, because I wasn't very big. So if I was going to get a fight, I was going to make sure that I cut you. I was kind of ruthless in how I just did things, but I sought attention that way. Getting out of high school, I wanted women really bad, but no matter how much of a tough kid I tried to be, I really couldn't get them. They still were like, yeah, you're cute, but you're like this little beanpole. So I ended up in the military school, and military school was a good thing. But what it really did is it just taught me how to get... I actually got put into an environment with like some of the best criminal minds that existed. So what you learn in military school when you have no real influence is you say, okay, so it's better not get caught. I became a master of just being extremely deceptive when I left military school. I also came out and I went from about 117 pounds to about 160 pounds of muscle. So now I'm the high school senior who's got his jeans on, his white t-shirt, and his big arms, and he's also the bad kid. So that became where women don't like me, to where, like, right, I'll never forget. The first girl that came after me was one of the local pastor's daughters, and I will never forget. He walked in on us doing some bad stuff in her room, and she had closed the window that I had snuck in on. I tried to jump out the window, and I just smashed into it, and I fell down, and I'm laying on this bed, and this pastor's staring at me. He's like, we're going to call your mom. I was like, man. So I became this really kind of bad child, and started kind of covering that up. My ego started kind of blowing up when I got into fitness. Grew into fitness, and I actually found kind of my calling at this stage. One day they asked me to go to work at the gym, and back then, you know, I'm 18 years old. You could make a lot of money selling gym memberships. And so I also got a hold of steroids. So I went from 160 pounds to 210 pounds. So now I'm the biggest, probably baddest dude, little dude, right? Short man syndrome on level, like 120, running around the gym. And then I'm also, I can sell fitness like it's going out of style. So they paid us a lot of money. So now you're 19. You're 220 pounds of muscle, and you're making $100,000 a year. Like, that's a pretty bad concoction for egomaniac through the roof, right? So, and then what they found in this time is I found bosses and men who would lead me, but they led me through money and motivation. So I found mentors, people who started trying to take me under their wing. But my ego got set on this, like, just this extremely large scale. They put my name up on a scoreboard, and I would just go crate chase after everything. I'm winning trips. I'm constantly, every trip there was, I won. I'm constantly having fun, making money. And I ended up getting promoted to district manager. Probably one of the best things that ever happened to me, because while I was in this stage, I was this, there's people today that know me when I tell them like how much I was into drugs and partying and having sex with strippers all the time, constantly. They would be like, what? Because I could fake it so well during work. I mean, I'm like this clean cut, You know, I would wear a tie and stuff when all the managers wouldn't. I mean, you know, so everybody in the organization is like, this guy's the man. And then they would have no idea that I had not gone to sleep in 2 days. And that I was, I even got to a point where I had concealer that I put under my eyes. So my eyes, you couldn't see the black circles because I would be doing coke and then, try to take some downers a little bit and then just go back and do it some more. So kind of an intense lifestyle. That's how I lived. And I thought that's what you're supposed to do is drive it like you stole it. So I got moved out to Denver, got promoted. I'm the youngest district manager of the company. My boss at the time was also my best friend and my mentor, so he kind of shut me down real quick and says, look, if you come out here and I catch you doing anything stupid, I will fire you and you will just be done. And I was like, okay, well, I don't have any bad influence. There's no drugs. So the best thing that could have happened to me is I moved out there. Drugs are gone. Now I'm just a straight worker, but I don't have anywhere to channel my energy, so I'm just like, I go insane, and I have probably the best 2 year run of a district manager has in probably a very long period of time, because that's all I did is work. I just put my head down and just went in stores, and 7 days a week I'm just working. Took this area, turned it around. Now I'm the youngest DM, and I'm the guy, and everybody's talking about going to be a future vice president and all these things, and so I'm just like loving it. Meet this wonderful woman, got this perfect life, my ego is on fire. I see these men in these meetings, and all of them have big cars, big houses, the wife that stays at home, you gotta have a golf course, you know, all those things. I'm like, that's what I'm gonna get. So I start doing it, and they finally give me my area. They moved me from Denver, where I ran part of the market, and they gave me my own area in Kansas. Cool thing about that was, when I went to go take over the Kansas market, my wife is from there. So if you're looking at like your perfect life, you're like, okay, I met a woman from Kansas, we're moving to Kansas. First thing I did when I get to Kansas, hey, let's build a house on a golf course. So I go build my house on the golf course, and I'm like, man, I've made it, right? Well, we have our child, and whenever my child comes into my life, and for those of you who don't have, there's a lot of old dudes in here. Y'all probably don't like this. All right. And if you don't, man, I'm sorry. Jesus still loves you. I'm joking. But the weirdest thing that happened when my child was born, and I remember we had like my mom was there and all these things were happening, and then for the first time in my life, fear crept in. Right, I went from this like bulletproof, invincible thing, and I'll never forget. I'm holding this baby. And I wanted nothing to do with helping my wife during this moment, right? But then the baby's born. I'm like, all right, you know, I'm like, all right, let's be a dad real quick. And so they hand me this kid, and I'll never forget, my arm cramped up because I wouldn't let her go. I had to roll her off my arm because I was just so enamored by this little creature. And I put it down, my arm's still cramped up. And then the first thing that hit me like that next morning is like, oh God, what if something happens and I fail and this baby, you know, ends up in a bad life, or, you know, I don't want her to see her mom work two jobs. You know, I've got to go to work. So like 2 days goes by when you're supposed to be celebrating with your family and stuff like that. I'm back at work. You know, people are like, why are you at work? I'm like, I got to go to work. So I'm start going to work. Well, we both know, right? A woman needs love. She needs nurturing. She needs help. And I'm like, you need to handle this. I need to handle work. So I'm leaving earlier, staying later, leaving earlier, staying later, leaving earlier, staying later. I'm coming home, and she's, my wife, who's an A-type personality, that's why I married her, is like sitting here talking to a six-month-old all day, right? So she's like, let's talk. And I'm like, I don't have time to talk to you, you know? And I've had a long day. I need to grab this bottle of wine real quick, my guitar, and go down to the basement. Give me my time, and then I'll come back for you. So then, of course, come back upstairs. We're distant, and that just starts to spiral. This is when I realize I'm not bulletproof, man, because all of a sudden my marriage is just like falling apart. She's attacking me, I'm attacking her back. And when you do that, and I see it all the time, you start grasping for straws, right? You're like, okay, well, maybe we need to, let's go to church. So we just start showing up at church, you know, and she, you know, we leave church, and then we're just right back at it. And so we're like, all right, well, let's do this. Eventually, I come over here, and I'm starting to bleed into work. You know, I've always been a real motivating guy, but I'm blowing people out now, and just people are seeing it, and our performance starts to struggle at work. So now I'm even more freaked out because work's failing, my marriage is failing. I've never failed. And so I go to my boss, and I'm like, man, I got to move home. So I decide to move back to Houston. I take a demotion, and what I, you know, so now my pride's super jacked up. And kind of in the back of my mind, I'm holding this against her, right? The whole time she's holding against me. And I'm saying, I'll move the family so you can go back to work. And I'll just do this so you can be happy and quit being such a bee. You know, that's, you know, then we'll be a happy family, right? That's my motto, right? You need to quit sucking and then we'll be fine. So, like, right? So we move back. I go back to work. She goes back to work. Marriage still sucks, right? And now I'm just more bitter at her because now I've taken a step down. You know, my ego's all beat up. I'm going to work every day. And so this is kind of when God just is like, look, like, we're going to go ahead and step in here. And or the devil really kind of just crept in and decided he was going to have his way with me. And I'm sitting there one day. She goes out of town. She takes my daughter to go see her family. So she's out and I got the house to myself. I'm sitting there. And during this time, we're still trying to go to church. So we found a church family and I'm trying to figure something out. God's kind of starting to try to work on me. And then the devil shows up and says, hey, man, I'm going to go ahead and screw you up real quick. And I'm sitting there one day and one of my really good friends and my running buddies I used to do a lot of drugs with and have sex with a lot of strippers with shows up at my gym to work out. Completely random, right? Other side of town. He's like, dude. And I'm like, hey, man. So we start talking. He's like, how's life? I'm like, oh, it's horrible. Yeah. I'm like, I got this crazy bitch wife and this little girl and she's awesome, but, you know, and I took a demotion, man. He's like, man, let me just take you out, bro. Let's just go out. When can you go out? I'm like, she's out of town this weekend. He's like, cool. Let's go to the men's club and I'll buy you some steak. I was like, sounds great. So we get there. Starts out kind of slow and then next thing, you know, fast forward, jump to the next day. I've been in my car with a stripper and some coke, and that turned into a pretty bad thing. So then the next week was when God was like, I'm going to go ahead and hit you in the face with it a little bit. And so I'm sitting in church, the same church that we're trying to go to, and it's my first time that I experienced the Holy Spirit. I was sitting there, and the preacher's preaching. I don't remember what he's preaching, and I don't remember the moment. I just remember how I felt, which was like I felt like I was in this tunnel. And that this entire giant building, 4,000 people, is just shut down. And he was looking right at me and saying, I'm a piece of crap. So tears start coming out, man. I just start, my heart's hurting. And my wife's looking at me like, what's wrong with you, you know? And so that night I came home and told her, I said, hey, I told her what I did. And so she kind of huddled up into this thing, and I developed this new guilt and this thing that overwhelmed me. And hold on, I gotta check my timestamp. So I gotta move faster. But to make a long story short, what ends up happening is I end up getting like this overwhelming guilt. She drives into our marriage and decides that she's gonna try to hang in there. So this goes on for like 2 years. But she's done. She's actually done with me. She thinks I'm a piece of crap, but she wants to try to fix the marriage. On the other hand, I become this holy God guy, right? I decide this is when I actually meet Stan, and Stan gets into my life, and I'm going to church. I'm like leading Bible studies. I'm doing all the actions that are associated with being a Christian man now because I want to fix our marriage. And this entire time that I'm doing this, I'm holding it over her head. So I'm just like, she's kind of going to building her new life, bodybuilding and stuff like that. She's got this new man workout partner and all these things, and I'm seeing this stuff happen in front of me, like my whole life slipped away from me, and I keep trying to reel her in by holding her hostage by saying, well, why, if you go to church more, maybe you'd be able to forgive me, and if you do this. So I'm just like attacking her all the time with God, right? So I'm just using it as a weapon as opposed to using it as a tool. And that's kind of what goes on for a couple of years. And so I eventually ended up changing careers and deciding to go into the financial industry after a few years of this. And our marriage is basically two people living in a house, raising a kid together with two separate lives. So, and we were kind of, that was it. So I approached her and decided, I would say, hey, I want to take some of our savings and stuff, start my own financial business, go into work for myself as a financial planner. She says, okay, cool, go ahead. Well, 30 days into that, I quit my job and I'm studying for my Series 7, my 63, and I'm a week out from my test, and she walks in my office and says, I'm leaving you. I'm like, what? So I guess she got the courage, right? Because now she's like, I don't want to sign up for 2 or 3 years of this hell with this dude because I don't even love the guy. And what I thought was the worst possible thing that could have happened to me at that moment wasn't even close, but we were kind of getting down that path. So I said, okay, whatever. We're going to go to counseling. I refused to believe that. Just put my head down, went back to work, threw her in counseling, and again, I kept attacking her. You know, if you just get right with God, maybe you could figure, you see me, I'm great. I'm going to church and going leading Bible studies. What's wrong with you? So I'm doing this for like a constant period of time, and then eventually 6 months into it, I'm driving home from work. I've been busting my butt in this financial business, and she calls me. I'll never forget. I'm on the road, and she just says, she left a counseling session with our counselor by herself. She said, "It's done." She goes, "I'm moving out of the house today. I'm done. We did the counseling. I don't love you." And that was the first time she really just said, "I don't love you anymore." So I pulled over. I'm just bawling. I can't get my mind wrapped around it. And from there, it was just this giant, like, tunnel. Everything fell apart. What happened was, is I'm losing everything. So she moves out, and I'm failing in business. I'm losing all my money. I watched ton of money just disappear right out from under my eyes that I worked for forever. I'm watching my house go away. I'm watching my life fall away. I'm doing all these things. And I keep holding on to my pride and my ego, not wanting to fail in this job, not wanting to fail in this marriage. So I refuse to believe it for like the longest period of time. So this goes on for like a year. And I'm just getting beat up. And I finally tap out. And at this time, I've been getting men into my life. So Sam, other people were starting to get planted. Jesus is starting to work in my life. And I'm like starting to kind of feel it. So I finally say, "Cool, I'm going to give my life to God." And I got baptized. I start working on it, and then I'm like, I'm starting to get it work, but I think I'm ready, right? So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to let go of this ego. I'm going to take this job. You know, I worked at 24-Hour Fitness for 15, years. I'll just get back there and figure it out, right? But at the same time, in the back of my mind, I'm going, "God, I can't believe this. You're such a loser. You're taking less money. You're taking this. You're taking that." All I was still worried about in my pride, even though I had said I gave my life to Christ, and that was the most important thing in my life, right? So when I went and got the job, after 15 years, it took them 6 weeks to get my paperwork correct. I went through this fake, the background check screw up. Like, it was during the time I was getting tested. Sam's like, "Something's going on." Because this is a company I worked for 15 years. I should have started the next week. It took them 6 weeks that I have no income. I have no job. I'm sitting here fighting my ego. And that's when God put me in the desert, right? It was 42 days. So he put Jesus in the desert for 42 days. He put Israelites for 40 years. And so the symbolicness that I look back on now, I said it was 42 days from the time I accepted the job to the time that I started, that I had to sit at my house all day and think about what a loser I was. I couldn't work. I had no money. My bank account was gone. And the only thing that I really had every day was the only thing that I had to look at every day was my little girl. And this whole 2 years of being there for her, I was like really understanding what love was. And so I would look at her and be like, "I don't care what kind of man I needed to be for anything else. I just need to be the right kind of man for you, you know?" And I love her so much. And I wasn't worried about failing for any other reason. I just wanted to be a better person so she could be like, "My dad's a good guy." And that's all that really mattered. And I understood at that moment how much... what love was, the kind of love that a father has. It's a different kind of love. And I started understanding the kind of love that the father had for me at that moment. It started to hit me as I started thinking about all that stuff. And there's a song called Sweetly Broken by Jeremy Riddle. And I was driving home one day, and I'm like, all these thoughts are in my head. And the Spirit came to me during the song, and it says, "At the cross you beckoned me. You draw me gently to my knees. I'm at a loss for words, so lost in love. I'm sweetly broken and I'm wholly..." This was it. It says, "I'm wholly surrendered." That song just like spoke into me. And I drove up to our cross at our church. And I just got down on my knees at the cross. And I was like, "I'm done, man. Like, I don't care about what people think. I don't care about what I've lost. None of that matters. I just want to be loved, and I just want to love, man. I just want to have what you have for me, and I just want to be that guy for other people, because I know I've got it in my heart. And I don't want to worry about any of it." And that day, it was done. Like, I mean, I was like just the most refreshing sense of peace and comfort that I've ever had in my life. Like, I just got up and I was like, "Man, it's all gonna be good." Like, you know, I remember telling Sam, I was like, "Dude, I'm good." Like it was, like, I was no longer worried about me. I just wanted to be here for him, you know, and do that. And I truly believe in my heart now, like, I love my ex-wife unconditionally, and that's something that I was pissed at her forever. Now I just love her. We get along great, you know. I have this protective shield that I didn't once have before, you know. I can approach things. One of my favorite verses I've got on my chest is Ephesians 6:13. It says, put on the armor of God so that you'll be able to resist him in times of evil. And I really feel like I have that shield with me every single day when I go out to do things. I have a purpose, you know. I was able to write my purpose. My purpose, you know, being a leader, I always wrote these purpose statements, and they always had some kind of attached to it with some kind of monetary or trophy, you know. Now it's just to bring as many men to Christ as I can. And I know at the end of the day that when I looked at my daughter and said, I just want her to be proud of her dad and be that dad for her. I don't think my daughter will ever say, man, my dad didn't do everything he could to try to help men be better men. And I just hope that someday I can be the kind of guy, like, I can set the bar for her, for the kind of guy that she has, right? She's in my prayer life every day. And I say, God, bring her somebody that she deserves. And I hope it's as close to what I can try to emulate for her, and I can set that bar, right? That's my vision. That's my goal. And I wouldn't have that if I didn't have Jesus. So that's all I got.